So we start the stapler interviews with the celebratory sound of a staple, and we'll end it with the same thing.
Yeah, we can do another one if you want.
Okay, now we talk to this man at the start of the Fringe. His name is...
Ronan Dempsey.
And you can't even read the title of his show for the number of stars that are stapled all over this flyer. And you must be smiling about it. I'm counting 10. We don't do stars on Fringe Review, but there's 10. 18 stars amongst four shows. Now, Joe Tomlin talked to you at the beginning about the words are there.
Yeah.
You're halfway through, just past halfway through. And you said something before this interview a bit interesting to me after we ran a workshop yesterday for shows in trouble. You know, trying to turn their Fringe around, not ticket sales, not reviews. And some of them admitted they were fairly clueless on day one, but you said you put the homework in.
Yeah, I suppose the Fringe itself put out the press contact call back in early June, and basically we got the press releases out and did a bit of hounding and did quite a lot of research on Twitter and basically... Any journalist that was on the list or who was of interest to us, we read their articles, we read their reviews, and we read who they were personally first before hitting them up. And it seems to have landed in some kind of way when we came over. So there was a lot of that stuff done, and having the press release right, we actually redone, basically on the advice of Fringe Review, we redone our press release in the last week. And it's been put out again, hopefully for a second batch.
Even more reviews. Well, you never know. And this is, you know, the words are there, written, performed by Ronan Dempsey. And a lot of writer-performers here say they do that because the profit share is better. so here you are with your thing, and it's hit the ground running. But are the words there? When you arrived, was it absolutely nailed as a piece? Or have you actually made changes and developed it while you're here?
None. None. Okay, the show was just over 2 years old, and it landed pretty much ready. You know, we did previews with Rachel here beside me, stage manager, before we came to Edinburgh, so it was ready to rock. We're playing in a quarter of the space that we normally play in.
Well, I suppose that's also what I was asking. That some people have come up to this thing. And it's not a very forgiving place in some venues. And so some people have gone, we'd have to make that a bit shorter. Yeah. We're going to have to develop that bit. We have to re-block it. We can hear it at the stage manager. You know, it's not easy to just run with it, is it?
No, absolutely not, no. As I say, like, to play a physical theatre piece in a quarter of the space that you're normally used to is, it's compromising. And thankfully enough, it hasn't been hugely compromising. But we spent two shows adjusting and finding our way around... A pop-up theatre, you know. Absolutely. The essence of the show hasn't changed, but yes, in terms of the venue and in terms of the Fringe, it has most definitely changed.
Now, warning contains strong language. I'm sort of relying on your humbleness and your realism with this question, okay? Somebody reviewed you and has referred to you as an example of physical mastery. So let's rise above you performing and... Let's describe and justify why that's true.
I come out on stage with...
I think you agree with it.
If I come out on stage with a wand, maybe I would agree with it, yeah. But
I suppose I'm asking, you know, you're a physical performer then. What is working? What do you know about yourself that would make you nod, not in a show-off way, and go, well, you know, that's fair enough. There's some stars behind that on the review.
I suppose when you honour your training, I think we obviously train in the same place as Joe in Paris, and when you honour that training and when you're true to that, it is the methods and the pedagogy is brilliant, and I think that's what shines through. It's not the performer, it's Lecoq and what they gave us.
I suppose it's a part of me, slightly cynical. If you, where I grew up, if you go in a car from where I grew up to Southend, you go on those kind of semi-motorway, and there's a kind of Toys R Us, or not there anymore, but kind of big things, and there's the so-and-so Academy of Acting, and there's clown schools all over the place, and, you know, there's licensed Lecoq this and that. You trained in Paris. What's the essence of that for people that don't know what we're talking about?
Total theatre. What impressed me about the school in Paris, Paul, was they never ever mentioned a reviewer, a director, a writer, previous work, everything was in the now. They didn't care about agents. They didn't care about big theatres. If you want to go here, you need to do this. They never referenced anything in regard to the outside world.
Okay, Ron, let me put that to the test then, because here we are stapling stars, and that is part of the game here, to get bums on seats. But is there someone in you, the person I'm talking to, that actually is just not in that, but is just in the work, whatever those stars have said?
Yeah. I mean, the stars, myself and Rachel were talking about it earlier on. I mean, the stars and pushing the stuff out and everything is, it's awareness. I mean, the number one thing with this play for us is awareness. It's to get it out and get it seen. And stars, actually, and all the hype and all, get it seen, you know?
But your will is in the work. Yeah. Not in, oh, shit, those arseholes said this or that.
No. We wouldn't get fazed by, look, we believe in what we're doing, and we back it and we trust it. Like, you know, it won't be for everybody. There's no doubt about it. There is no pleasing everybody, but it's work first. It absolutely definitely is work first.
How has that training changed who you might have been?
I was involved when I went to drama school, the classic conservative drama school in Dublin. I was in the game. I was in the Dublin scene and whatever. And when I went away, I saw a different theatre. I saw a different scene. And as I said earlier on, I saw that the focus on work only and not the game. And that's what changed for me. I came back and became, probably worked much more on my own and didn't worry about the periphery and. You need to do this, you need to do that, you need to act in the National Theatre. I don't care about that stuff anymore. Absolutely, I've almost no interest in it.
When you walk in Fringe Central, I don't know how you're going to take this, but you are among narcissistically obsessed people. And I don't blame them necessarily for that, but they are so in their eye about success, failure, there's all these lines they're on, and people obsessively busy. But you just sort of kind of glide in like an old ship into Dublin.
Any part of this darn Paul.
You know, in the physical performance on the stage, it's different, but is part of the training just made you calm, or am I just seeing the good side of you?
No, definitely. No, it is true, and I wouldn't just say that, but when you take away the crap out of it, all that's left is the work and the why. Why are you doing this? Like, what's it all for? It's this. I'm just holding up a domestic violence leaflet. I met Sarah D'Angelo yesterday of UK Says No More, and this is why the play exists. These guys are coming into the show today. It's going to get a bit of focus, and we're talking about possibly working in the future in terms of London or Northern Ireland. And the whole point of this play is for a guy or a girl to come into a show on their own and to feel like they're not mad and they're not alone. I am, and say, I am being coerced. You know, I am being abused. It's subtle or it's severe or whatever.
Yeah. And that's, of course, where the energy and the passion can be. You didn't shave this morning, did you?
No, it's a character thing, Paul.
Yeah, is it? Okay.
There's a perfect millimetre size on the stubble.
I suppose all it is, it's just this halfway point and just beyond. I'm using you as an example, and you're sort of confirming a bit, that there's a way to be here. That, you know, it's great that we're looking at great reviews and you brought your work here, but this is the way to be here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you have to back yourself. I think when you back yourself and when you trust yourself, you get that bit of self-esteem, and as what some people call the white noise is irrelevant. It's totally irrelevant. It's play first. That's the thing that drives me out on that stage every single day, is that guy or that woman in the audience.
Yeah.
And that's what extracts, that's what pulls that entire performance out of you. Nothing else. It's not you, Fringe Review, sitting in the back row or the list or whoever it may be. It's the person, that potential person who has heard of this play and gone, I might get something out of that, you know?
Taking Fringe as the example of one publication, but there are many others, and you're quoting some. What do you do with the feedback? Because there's a couple of performers I know, known for years who don't read any of their reviews until the end. You know, and it's not because they don't care about what's said. In fact, they read them very greedily and see what they can learn from them. But during the Fringe, it's about the work that they brought. But what do you do with these words that are saying things about you, good and bad?
What was interesting, I was delighted that I met Joe that day at the Fringe Review. At the Fringe Review meeting. And genuinely, regardless of what had been in the review, I am fascinated by what Joe Tomlin has to say about this play.
Yeah.
Not in an ego way, but it does fascinate me what she sees as a maker, as a professional, you know, that kind of way. So I am interested in the interpretations. Like, it's fun for me to read something and go, oh, that's like someone the other day suggested that the music in the show was annoying, and like 99.9% of people that we've ever spoken to in 2 years just say it's phenomenal, and it's like it was written for the show. Mm. But somebody says, no, I was annoyed by that, and that fascinates me.
Right.
You know?
But if someone like Jo put in a review, I haven't read the review, but she says, you know, well, the pacing was wrong here, or it's not quite convincing there. Do you park that, or do you actually read it and go, oh, yeah, you might be right, and we might see a change the next day?
I would consider it. I would. But it comes down to balance, like how. Like, if 60% of people are raving about it and 40% of people are kind of hemming and hawing about it, like, what do you do? It, as I say, it comes back to your vision. It comes back to that bit of conviction that you need. Is it getting to the right person? Is it saying something? Is it encouraging? Is it this or is it that? That's the number one. So the critical eye on it, as I say, it's fascinating. But I wouldn't really adjust. We tend to work on stuff for quite long periods of time, where we would pace stuff and we would bring in invited audiences. So we interrogate work quite a lot before it hits the dungeon.
How do you deal with the repetition of it?
You just dig deep. It's the guy. I hate to say it, it's a broken record now, but the man or woman in the audience, you have absolutely no issue in performing this play every single day, because you're putting something across, and it's very, very natural. Like, when you stand behind those curtains and Rachel calls, turn your damn phones off. You're engaged straight away, you know.
Do you ever just kind of think, oh, not feeling up to it?
Black Wednesday was horrific. It was lashing rain. It was grey. We had two pre-sales, and we were absolutely destroyed. We were absolutely exhausted, and I was bent over, kneeling backstage just before we went on, and other stuff had happened, technical stuff, but. You engage. The minute you take the first step, you're like, it's transformative. It's like adrenaline.
You're younger than me, but I think you might be older than Rachel sitting here. So just to end this, first of all, can you give me a number between 5 and 20?
For what?
Just give me a number between 5 and 20.
Oh, Christ. 16.
Okay, so the 16-year-old version of yourself, as you remember him, comes in and sees the show, sits at the back, watches it, and then comes up to you afterwards for a conversation. What do you think your 16-year-old version of you would say to you now?
Do it earlier. Don't wait till you're 26.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
And bloody get your finger out and have a bit of confidence and a bit of self-esteem and do what you want to do.
Okay, and finally, and you can see this one coming now, I want between 50 and 80.
50 and 80. 16. I'm joking. Oh, 68.
Can you describe yourself when you're 68?
Hopefully. I've had a lot of mentors. I've had three absolutely key people who have helped me along in the last 12, 13 years, and I'd love to be in that position where you have people that you're literally just giving it all away to. At 60, yeah. Yeah. And a nice body of work, a really, really solid, honest work.
Well, imagining we were born at the beginning of this August, we're just entering the Middle Ages now. Thanks for talking to Fringe Review.
Oh, one more.
Oh, go on.
68 stars.
I don't believe a word of that. Okay, come on, one more.